Hello, LinkedIn, and welcome back. And to all our podcast listeners that are catching up on this episode later, my name's Sarah Goodall. I'm the CEO of Tribal Impact, and we today are talking about social media and sales. And I am so happy we finally got Paul Lewis to join us from Pitney Bowes. So, Paul, we've known each other for quite a long time, haven't we? And then recently met each other at LinkedIn. So, do you want to give us, just as a bit of an introduction, because we're going to be talking about social media and sales, we're going to dive straight in, but do you want to just give us an introduction to you and your role? Because you head up digital, social media, marketing and sales enablement. Sounds a very big job. So maybe you can just give us an overview.
quick overview. My hands are in kind of a lot of different pots, so to speak. So, I oversee social selling at Pitney Bowes. That does encompass, though, a little bit of marketing. Obviously, I'm working hand in hand with global sales teams. And then there's the employee advocacy aspect as well that comes into the mix. So, there's kind of that sort of whole package that's put together, which I oversee.
Anybody who's watching us live, give us a wave, say hello, drop us a comment. Obviously, if you're listening to the podcast, you can't do that, but you can join the next live session. But put your questions in, because this is a great opportunity to ask somebody who's a practitioner of this, has been doing it for a while. I'm going to say a long time, because 11 years ago, Paul, I don't think we really had social selling, did we? Or were you one of the pioneers? I'd love to know where it started.
Do I call myself a pioneer? I kind of jumped on board with this in the early days. So I don't even think, the term social selling had kind of been bounded around at that point. But, it really was a case of, at the time we were just looking for sort of new and inventive ways of trying to generate leads, sales leads, with, let's say, very little budget. And I'd kind of been delving into social media and thought to myself at the time, surely there's got to be sort of like a sales application around social. And I think, that was kind of like that sort of catalyst moment. That's where it kind of all started.
Yeah. And where did that curiosity start then? Have you worked in sales, or have you always been in marketing? How did you make that connection? I'm curious.
I am a marketer, but I have worked in sort of business development and sales roles, albeit in a small capacity, by profession, I am a marketer. Whilst I've had the opportunities, to go down that let's call it the dark side of sales or business development, I've kind of always been hesitant. I've always wanted to stay on the marketing front, which is kind of where my passion is, to be honest.
Yeah. Well, one thing you mentioned earlier is that you said you touch a little bit on employee advocacy, social media, and Pitney Bowes is a massive it's a global organization, right? So can you just talk to us a little bit about that and how this transcends? Because a lot of people in our community will be in global organizations, different cultures, different approaches to social. So can you give us a bit of an indication as to how you do that at Pitney Bowes?
Yeah, I would say, when I first started out at Pitney Bowes and kind of built this program, this started off in a very, very small capacity, in a small manner, with, thinking back, probably what, 7, maybe 10 sales reps at the time who were based here in the UK. And then slowly but surely, as I've kind of built and scaled this program, kind of, really, I would say, sort of word of mouth, has helped to really sort of project this. and turn it into a global program. So now, you know, this spans, you know, pretty much, you know, every continent, you know, where we have a presence, you know, and I'm working now with, you know, everything from, you know, business development or inside sales or pre-sales people right the way through to, you know, let's say field sales or major account managers, people like that. And at the same time, there's without going into huge amounts of detail on Pitney Bowes, but, you know, I'm working with sales reps who, you know, on the one side might be selling in a franking machine or a postage meter, which is what most people know Pitney Bowes for, you know, and a business win there, you know, could be a couple of $1,000s, to the opposite end of the scale, whereby, you know, we have a big global e-commerce business unit, whereby, you know, the sales there run into the hundreds of thousands, if not the millions of dollars. So, you know, it really does span, you know, that entire sort of spectrum, you know, within sales, from the small wins, you know, right the way up to, you know, to the enterprise sort of level deals.
So you said it started with like 7 to 10. So where are you at now in this program? Are we talking, you know, hundreds, thousands?
Currently, I'm working with 300 sales people across Pitney Bowes. So the majority of those individuals are based in the United States or Canada. There's a handful as well, you know, dotted around Europe. Slowly but surely now we've got people coming on board in India, you know, a small number of individuals in Australia and New Zealand, and I've now got people in Brazil that's showing an interest as well.
Amazing.
So, you know, it really has grown, and that's, I would say, mainly by word of mouth. But at the same time, you know, when people get to hear also about some of the business wins, because that's, you know, one key aspect of it, you know, to communicate, you know, details of the program, but in particular, the business wins, you know, to communicate that internally is the best way really of garnering further interest.
Oh, I've got so many questions that I'm writing down now, Paul. Now, I've got to say, Ryan says there's a slight delay, but he can still hear us both fine. So that's good. Thank you, Ryan. Hello, Dave from Canada. Actually, you just mentioned Canada. So, Dave, you always join our sessions. Lovely to see you, Dave. Anybody else wants to drop a comment or a question? I've got a ton of questions for Paul, but now's your time to ask. So, so business wins. I'm going to come back to that one. In fact, yes, I will. So you mentioned about different roles: inside sales, key account managers, pre-sales, field sales. Can you tell us a little bit about the different roles and how they approach social selling or using social media for sales? Because you've clearly defined different roles there. So maybe there's different applications.
Yeah, you know, so for example, a major account manager is going to be focused specifically on, let's say, 7 to 10 accounts. So that is, you know, sort of their core focus. So obviously, you know, I'm going to be able to work with that person. We can do a deep dive into those accounts. We can look for cross-sell and upsell opportunities, you know, and it really is a case of running, let's say, account-based marketing programs, you know, geared around those specific accounts that, you know, that salesperson's got a particular focus on. But, you know, kind of me sort of keeping them up to date with, you know, the latest happenings, who's joining the business, you know, who may have left the business. You know, it could be that maybe we're working, you know, for, you know, a large enterprise account, but we've only got one, you know, sort of small part of that business. Whereas, you know, there are other parts of that business that, you know, we haven't, you know, kind of stepped taken that step yet. So it's then trying to sort of leverage the individuals that we have the relationship with within that account to see whether or not, you know, they can help us by making introductions to other people within other business areas. So, you know, that would be like, you know, on the account based marketing side, you know, for a major account manager. Then again, you know, I'll be working with salespeople whose core focus is specifically net new business. So they are not touching any company that's had any sort of relationship with Pitney Bowes in the past. So, you know, I will be able to help them identify, you know, who those accounts are. Then obviously we can identify the key targets within those accounts and then, you know, undertake the methodology that I've put together in order to then start to try and build those relationships with those individuals that we identify.
Yeah. Do you know, there's a couple of things you said there, actually. So your style is very much like working one-to-one, especially with the major account managers. It sounds like you're, you know, you sit and you workshop it with them on the phone. I love that. But also, you know, using referrals, TeamLink is amazing. TeamLink, TeamLink Extend. And there's also a new filter, well, it's not so new anymore, but in LinkedIn Sales Navigator, where you can see which executive can introduce you into that account, especially for net new names, which is a brilliant filter. So I love all this. This is really cool. But there's only one of you, right, Paul? Or are you in a team? I don't know.
No, there's only one of me doing this. You know, as you can well imagine, you know, trying to serve 300 salespeople across the business globally on my own, it's not easy.
How does that work then? Because I mean, how you can't do one to well, you will do a lot of one to one, but how? What does that look like? How do you manage that? Because this is the case for a lot of our customers. It's one person, and how do you scale yourself?
I'm not gonna lie. It's not easy. You know, yes, I have the support of LinkedIn. So you know, if I ever need to pull them into to undertake training, you know, or coaching sessions, they are there. So I do have that luxury. You know, again, whilst I'll try and run sessions for a specific team, I do tend to find that, you know, those one-to-one sessions, you know, just work so much better. Everybody's got their own, you know, sort of pace of learning. Everybody's going to need a degree of handholding, and sometimes, you know, doing it in that group environment isn't necessarily the best of environments to work in. So it is difficult, and you know, I'm trying slowly but surely to sort of build a train the trainer program within Pitney Bowes, so at least I'll have some local representatives in in different geographies, you know, that that are going to be able to assist on this front. But I think, Sarah, to be honest with you, it's probably one of the key sort of barriers that that I face and have to try and overcome on a daily basis.
Yeah, scaling up. And I've just realized Dave actually asked that question. Sorry, Dave, I asked it and then I saw your question, so there you go, two birds, one stone. I was going to talk, you also touched on business wins and how it's important to capture those, because quite often when you start with social selling, you've got to capture those little wins to then encourage others and to put them out. How do you get insight into what's happening? Do those sort of bubble up in these coaching conversations that you have? How do you capture those wins and then put them in front of everyone?
So there's kind of two aspects to that. Firstly, whenever a salesperson who I'm working with, if they have generated, you know, a sales opportunity, when they're putting that opportunity into our CRM system, I am trying to enforce that they attribute that particular opportunity back to the program that I lead. So there is a specific campaign code that I've had created whereby I get them to just append that code onto that actual CRM Salesforce opportunity. Now, that's easier said than done, because we all know how difficult it is to get a salesperson to put something into a CRM system. You know, even the basic information, let alone asking them to, you know, to put in a campaign code. So, you know, really the other aspect to that is that anytime I learn about an opportunity or an account that a salesperson is working on, I'll go and find that opportunity myself within Salesforce and I'll follow that. And Salesforce just gives me those regular updates every single time that sales rep, you know, makes an update to that particular opportunity. And at the same time, you know, I'm, let's say, nagging the salespeople that I'm working with constantly, you know, give me an update. How's this going? Why is it stalled? You know, if it's stalled, is there anything that that I can do? What can we do to move that opportunity from, you know, stage two to stage three, or stage three to stage four, whatever it may be? So, you know, I'm kind of constantly asking, you know, just to try and get updates, you know, because ultimately I've got to justify the investment that Pitney Bowes is making, you know, with all the tools and technologies, the main one being Sales Navigator. But, you know, I've got to justify that ongoing investment. And the only way that I can do that is to demonstrate, you know, exactly how much are we generating as a result in the way of sales opportunities. And more importantly, you know, of those opportunities that have been generated, how many of them actually go through to, you know, to close won deals.
Yeah. And that's in, you mentioned something there, which has sparked my brain when you said, you know, how do we apply social selling to move that deal from one stage to the next? That's really smart, actually. So you're not just looking at how we can get access to new accounts, how we can deepen existing accounts, but you're even looking at the stage of the deal and how you can move it from one to the other, and what techniques you can apply to help support that process.
Yeah, you know, examples there, you know, we've had deals that have been stalled, you know, for one reason or another, and it's not necessarily, you know, in any way the fault of, you know, the main points of contact within that, within the account. Maybe, you know, everything's been agreed, but it's, I don't know, a procurement team or the legal team within that account that are, you know, kind of sitting on the contract. And I, you know, I've had it in the past whereby we've used Sales Navigator to look up, you know, who is the head of legal or who is the head of procurement. And, you know, we've reached out to, you know, to those individuals with an attempt, you know, to try and push things along. And it's worked. It has worked. Yeah, don't, you know, sort of disregard using, you know, that approach, you know, to try and move an opportunity that that may have stalled. It does work.
Yeah, super application. I don't think we've ever had that on LinkedIn Live before. So, and just a quick reminder, anybody who's watching, anybody wants to pop in a question, you're most welcome to. I've got more than enough, but I will weave them in if that's what you would like. Now, I'm going to go back to what you've originally said about employee advocacy, because now, in my experience, quite often advocacy is managed separately, maybe by internal comms or marketing, or, you know, its application is a little bit different, employer branding. But you mentioned it when you talked about social selling. So you've obviously integrated the two. Can you tell me a little bit more about that and how employee advocacy tools may help your sales teams?
Yeah, so kind of let's sort of strip this down. So I've got this methodology which I've put together that, you know, I try as best as I possibly can to stick to that when I'm working with you know, these salespeople. It all starts, which probably comes as no surprise, with helping to build their personal brands. You know, ultimately, you know, if they're not obviously positioning themselves in the correct way on LinkedIn, they're not doing themselves any favors. And of course, you know, any activity that they carry out on LinkedIn is likely to result in people clicking through to view their profile. So that's where I start. There's, I would say, sort of a four-stage process from there on, which is, let's call it the social selling sort of steps, whereby, you know, we'll start off with step one, which is, let's call it the prospecting. So this is where obviously we're going to, you know, try and carry out, you know, various different ways in order to identify the key targets within accounts that, you know, that we're looking to, you know, to go ahead and engage. Steps two and three, I term these as sort of monitor and listening. So this is where we, you know, we kind of want to monitor, you know, and listen out for all the latest news, insights, updates, you know, on the individuals and the accounts that, that are of interest to us, because hopefully we can leverage, you know, some of those news and insights to our advantage. And then the final stage of the four there is the engagement stage, whereby, you know, there's a variety of different ways that we can look to go about kickstarting that process of engagement. But coming back, Sarah, to what you were saying about the employee advocacy, all of that is underpinned by the need for that salesperson to be sharing content on LinkedIn on a regular basis. And that's a healthy mix of both Pitney Bowes content, but also carefully selected third party content, because what we're trying to do is obviously position that salesperson as being, you know, that, that subject matter expert. We want to try and, you know, further build their credibility. And that's where the employee advocacy aspect comes into it. You know, I don't want to pull a salesperson away from the job that they're being asked to do, which is, you know, going out and selling. So if we can make life as easy as possible for that salesperson, especially when it comes down to, you know, having them post out content onto LinkedIn, and for that matter, other social media networks, you know, then I'll do whatever I can to, you know, to ensure that, that we make that process as simple as possible.
Yeah, it's a good point, because I read a report, and I'm trying to, as you were talking, I was thinking, was it Forrester or Gartner? I can't remember, but one of them said, you know, salespeople are spending only probably about 30% of their time actually selling, because they're updating CRM, writing proposals, you know, but they don't, 30% of their time is in front of the customer. I think it was Gartner. And then, you know, what you're saying here is, and now we're going to ask you to find some content, which you can't, it's not always easy, because you've got to make sure, is it okay? Is it mentioning competitors? Can we, you know, can we share this? So this provides a bit of a safe bucket, really, and it just cuts that time out, and it can just save. But it also gives you another layer of data that you can start to look at. So
exactly. Yeah. You know, and we're leveraging the recommended content section of the Pitney Bowes LinkedIn company page. So, you know, we're putting content up there on a regular basis and having the salespeople go in and share that content. But, you know, we try and encourage them, if they can, to put their own spin on it. So, you know, whilst we're crafting that content for them, you know, we're more than happy for them, you know, to play around with the words. And if they want to, they can even, you know, start to tap into LinkedIn's AI, you know, engine. So, you know, there is that ability there. So, you know, if they're still not sure on, you know, what should I say, you know, they can get a little assistance from the artificial intelligence engine that LinkedIn's now providing.
Yeah. And actually, so thank you, Donna, for popping that report in, the Gartner one. But it was you that put this in my head, actually, Donna, because it was the HubSpot 2024 sales trends report that you found. I forgot about that. And that's where it said sales teams are spending just 33% of their time actively selling. And you mentioned AI, and this is becoming a, you know, a typical thing for us to bring on these calls. I'm going to jump to that question about AI. Paul, where do you think it's going in the context of digital selling, social media for sales? Where do you think AI is going to start weaving into that methodology?
Look, I could discuss this all day long. I think AI is there to support salespeople, but, you know, ultimately, and look, this is my belief, you know, ultimately nothing is gonna take away from, you know, that actual physical, you know, relationship between the prospect or the client and the salesperson. You know, so whilst we can tap into, you know, all sorts of AI applications, you know, whether that be, I don't know, ChatGPT for helping to craft, you know, sales messaging, you know, or you know, any other AI systems that, you know, might predict, I don't know, the best time, you know, to try and engage, you know, a prospect. You know, ultimately, that's all there. And I'd say, yes, tap into it and leverage that and make the most of it. Because obviously, if it's going to save, you know, a salesperson time, as you've just said, Sarah, you know, then that's great. But, you know, ultimately, it's still got to be that salesperson who fronts the campaign, so to speak, you know, and has those regular conversations with the prospect or the client.
Yeah, I would agree. And actually, so thank you, Scott, for saying hello. Scott Robbins says hello. Good to hear from you, Paul. So I think you might know him. Sandy said not thrilled with LinkedIn's AI yet. No, some bits are better than others. I quite like the Account IQ. That's quite useful. But the whole AI generated bio and all of that is not that great. I'll tell you what I did see the other day pop up, though. And I know not everybody uses this, but I've got Crystal Nose embedded into my LinkedIn. And when you send messages, it can allow you to use AI to automatically not only create the message, but then tailor the message for a DISC profile of the person that you're about to send it to. That's quite clever. And I've seen it change the message before my eyes. So the language changes based on who. Oh, my light's gone off. I knew I did say that was going to happen. Didn't I? Hold on. It's back. But yeah. That was it. So I don't know if anybody uses Crystal Nose. Pop it in the comments. I think there's a bit of a delay, but if you do use it, pop it in the comments. I'd be interested to know.
It's a really, really good little bit, you know, little bit of technology. I've only got the free, you know, sort of Google Chrome extension, but it's good. You know, I'd definitely recommend, you know, having a look into it. Like you say, Sarah, you know, if you identify somebody, it's quite amazing what Crystal Nose will actually, you know, pull up on the individual and even, you know, give you an indication as to, you know, do you use like techno speak, you know, when engaging with that person, or should you steer well clear of that and, you know, stick to plain English? Very, very, very insightful. So, yeah, definitely anyone who hasn't, check out Crystal Nose.
Yeah, and if you haven't done it, I remember doing it with somebody and it came up. So put your own name into it and it'll Crystal Nose profile you. And it's really quite scary to have a look at the first thing. And I remember showing it to someone who was skeptical of everything and it came up and it went, "You tend to be quite skeptical." And I was like, "Yeah, well, it would say that, wouldn't it?" And I was like, let's just say that that's what it did say that you would say. So yeah, where have I got? Oh yes, I've got another one here for you. Come Ed, and again, put your questions in if you want to hear it. So get Paul to answer. Right, I hear a common challenge: inactive licenses. So, you know, we're not fully utilizing them. We're not utilizing them as best we could. And can you give our community a little bit of insight as to how you manage that? Do you have that challenge, and if so, how you manage it?
So it is a challenge that I do face. You know, there are, you know, I'll be totally open and honest, there are plenty of people who, you know, at Pitney Bowes have been given a Sales Navigator license that aren't necessarily leveraging it to its full potential. There are a handful as well who have a Sales Navigator license and they just never seem to log in and, you know, and even use it. You know, in that case, I tend to reach out to those individuals to say, you know, look, this is a really clever piece of technology here. So what can I do to help you? And, you know, hopefully they're you know, they're going to come back to me. And in many cases they do to say, yeah, can you give me a refresher, or, you know, can you show me this, or can you show me that, you know, once again. I have gone through on numerous occasions, though, the process of, you know, I've contacted someone who's just not using their license. I've offered them, you know, additional help and support. They've not come back to me. I've then gone back to them and offered that again, you know, and I'll do that maybe two or three times, at which point, you know, it's clear, you know, at that stage that, you know, I'm just not going to get anywhere with this individual. And I'm better off channeling my time and my effort, you know, with other people. And therefore, I'll just revoke the license. I'll pull the license. You know, I've got plenty of people lined up around the block here waiting for a sales navigator license. And I put money on it that, you know, that person that I revoke the license from, I bet you in 6 months' time, all of a sudden, I'll, out of the blue, I'll receive an email from them to say, so this sales navigator thing that you were talking to me about 6 months ago, tell me a little bit more about it, or, you know, how do I get access to it? So, you know, they do come around, but it is important, Sarah, you know, for anyone that's overseeing a program, you know, delve into to obviously the usage stats. I mean, obviously you can lose yourself within those numbers, but I would say, you know, the core one to look at, you know, really is the number of days active that that individual, you know, has been. Obviously, if you can see that they're not active, you know, then there's clearly, you know, additional help that that person requires. And that's where you need to be sort of channeling your efforts initially to, you know, to see if there's something you can do to spark, you know, that individual into action.
Yeah. You know, you make a good point there, though, Paul, because you can't convince people, right? You need to work with the ones that are in the already in that mindset, the ones that perhaps are not there yet. They'll get there, but in their own time. And maybe the time is just not right. And like you said, 6 months later, it'll be that stuff you were talking about. I'm kind of interested. So helping the ones that have intent to invest some time in, I think, is an easier job. And especially when there's only one of you. You have to choose your battles, don't you? So prioritize.
Yes.
It's
it's just like I say, it's just an ongoing issue. You know, and I'm gonna say anyone that's leading a program, you know, regardless of whether you know you've got 300 licenses or three licenses, you know, you're going to see that, you know, there are those that are using the license and there are those that are, let's say, underutilizing it. So it's just a case of really, you know, trying to stay on top of that, you know, doing whatever you can to ensure that, you know, everyone that has been allocated a license is leveraging it and understands the value that it can offer.
Yeah, you really are quite an enabler of change, and this is not just about tools, this is behavior change. And I've said this over and over again, you know, this is a change management process. And even the LinkedIn Sales Navigator community recognized you as a social selling enabler. What was it called? I can't remember. You had an award, didn't you, or got recognized?
There was an award, I think it was last year, I can't even remember now the actual term of a name of the award, but if you haven't checked it out, if you know, if you have got a sales navigator license, you'll have access to this fantastic community that that LinkedIn has created. You know, if you need questions answered, you know, if you want to find out, you know, sort of tips and tricks or the latest, you know, news and insights on what's coming, the community is the place to go. You know, I've been an active member of that community for quite some time. Anytime that I can, you know, sort of try and help others and obviously, you know, sort of share my knowledge, I'm only too happy to do so. And, you know, you'll find a lot of, information that I've shared within that community. So,
yeah. And that's where our paths crossed, didn't it? Because we were, as community members, we were all invited to LinkedIn a few weeks ago. And that's when we got chatting. It was like, Paul, we've not had you on a LinkedIn Live. Do you fancy doing that? And here we are. So, Right, my final question, and I'm going to just check back if I wonder if anyone's hearing us actually, because I was hoping people might put some things in about crystal nose there. But anyway, my final question still ties back to AI, and then I'm going to summarize it up. But as an organization, is Pitney Bowes looking at how to integrate AI into sales processes, you know, beyond Sales Navigator and social selling, but how are they applying? Obviously, you can't give confidential data and information, but, you know, what thoughts that are going on around AI and sales generally and relationships?
We're very much, you know, sort of geared towards embracing AI. You know, I mean, we've got a whole suite of tools and technologies that that we're leveraging, you know, on the marketing side, but also on the sales side. And we're tapping into the AI, you know, sort of applications that that those tools and technologies have to offer. You know, we've even gone to, you know, the extent of we've actually created our own AI bot internally. Within Pitney Bowes. I have to say, excuse me, I've not actually used it yet, but you know, I know that salespeople are using it. It is, you know, designed to help speed up some of the processes that that they have to work through. You know, slowly but surely it's being rolled out into various different business areas. So, you know, we're very much an organization that's definitely open to embracing, you know, the world of AI and seeing where it takes us.
Yeah. And we are too, actually. I mean, obviously we're much smaller than you guys, but the way it's just brilliant, actually, how you apply it, how you can see, and the way you roll it out, it's not like a new tech. You can't just sort of train people on it. You have to weave it into everyday processes and technologies and the way that you do things and then share it with others. So I always like record a quick video. We do it to each other, actually. And it's like, hey, I just used, you know, a Copilot to create this and speed this process up. And the behavior change happens amongst the community, rather than, you know, right, let's go, let's all change. So yeah, it's a good one. So
absolutely.
Yeah. So Helen, yes, I can see Ryan's sorted that out. Crystal knows, yes, we've got that. And they can hear us, so they've not gone. That's good, isn't it, Paul? Because I did wonder, good. I was like, oh, nobody's heard about it. That was brilliant, Paul. Thank you so much. And there's a few things here that I've circled that really stuck out for me. The stages apply. There's one thing looking at social selling or sales, social media for sales for different roles, but actually different stages of the pipeline. And what you, the great example that you gave there about, you know, looking up who's in legal, who's in procurement, let's see if we can speed this process up. What a brilliant application of taking the actual process and applying it. The business wins as well, how you've said, yes, you do force the process, but you also watch deals in the pipeline and like, hold on a minute, didn't I help you get into that account? Don't you think you should be putting some accreditation next to that? And then this whole workshopping approach that you do. So you obviously spend a lot of one-to-one time with people, really getting them in, but then how you manage the licenses and how you let people come up and see the light when they're ready to, and you don't try and force them. I think these are great examples. And I love that you're talking about employee advocacy as well, because I agree, it's one of the most time-consuming parts of a salesperson's role to keep nurturing their digital networks is finding content, and advocacy can help there. So have you got anything to add, Paul, before you go? Anything I've not covered in my question?
Wow. Anything else? Let me give you one other little tip as well. So, you know, we were talking earlier on and I was saying about, you know, the idea of looking up those people that are working in procurement or those people that are working in legal. One other key role within an organization, you know, if you're trying to, you know, to, let's say, get your foot in the door, and you're not necessarily having any luck with, you know, the specific individuals that you've initially identified, try and reach out to somebody that oversees HR. That individual is normally very, very well connected within their organization. So it's just another, you know, sort of let's say, a slightly different approach to take, you know, in order to get into an organization. But, you know, sometimes you can't necessarily take that direct approach. You know, you're coming at it from a slightly different angle here. But the HR approach is one that that I've used on a few occasions, and that's worked as well. So
that is a great idea. And it's just actually reminded me of another thing, which is you may not get, everybody wants to reach the C-suite, right? But they're the most busiest people that spend the least amount of time on digital platforms. Quite often they're with customers. And so actually sometimes going a couple of levels down the organization, maybe even further, to somebody who's on LinkedIn, who is accessible and active, and getting them to influence upwards, and that can also help. So what a great, these are all strategies, aren't they, for getting into new accounts, but in a non-conventional way. Brilliant. Paul, I knew this was going to be a good one. Thank you so much. Thank you for listening.
Thank you, Sarah.
And everyone for coming and the little chit chat that was going on. And oh, Helen said, brilliant link between employee advocacy and social selling. So absolutely. It's an untalked about link. And this, I think, Paul, what you do is quite unusual, because most organizations haven't made that link. So, and there is a very clear link. The problem is a lot of employee advocacy tools have got brand content in. And as you said earlier, your sales teams, to be trusted advisors, need to know, to demonstrate they know the industry, not just the brand. So thank you. So yeah. Thank you everyone else for watching, and for podcast listeners that are listening onto the recording. If you want to find the next LinkedIn Live, check us out. Follow us on LinkedIn at Tribal Impact, and we'll be publishing the next one there. In the meantime, thank you very much, Paul. Really appreciate your time today.
Thank you, Sarah.
Thanks for listening to this episode. If you found it insightful, it would be awesome if you could leave us a rating on the Apple podcast, or if you could share the podcast with one of your friends or colleagues.